The big news today is in the diplomatic field. Russia has rejected the offer of the United States to employ its good offices in restoring diplomatic relations between Poland and Russia. Cordell Hull makes that announcement in Washington today. Now, that might be taken as a flat Russian declaration that Moscow is telling the Allies not to intervene in the Russian-Polish border dispute. But there is a catch in that interpretation. America's offer, you'll note, was not to mediate the specific Russian-Polish border tangle. Our State Department was trying specifically to end that dispute by bringing the Russians and Poles officially together again in diplomatic relations. But Moscow considers and has said that the present Polish refugee government in London is not representative, that it's a government, in other words, hostile to the Russians. Therefore, what Russia is probably saying in refusing American mediation today is this, saying that Russia refuses to negotiate on anything with the present Polish regime in London, on frontiers or anything else. It seems to be a blunt hint that the present Polish government in London will have to be reconstituted before Moscow will recognize it. Now, essentially, this doesn't change the situation already prevailing, since Moscow cut relations with the London Polish regime some time ago. The reason Russia cut relations, you will recall, was that Moscow grew furious with the Poles when the Poles picked up a German propaganda story about alleged Russian atrocities to Poles. According to this Nazi story, the Russians killed 10,000 or more Polish people near Smolensk in Russia back in 1940. The Polish government demanded an investigation and made charges against the Russians. Russia came back by declaring it was the Germans who did those killings and not the Russians. Moscow broke relations. Today, American correspondents in Russia have been taken to the scene of the alleged massacre of the Poles, the Katyn Forest outside Smolensk. Russia has produced evidence, which these American correspondents apparently consider reliable, that the murdered Poles had papers in their pockets showing that they were killed late in 1941, when the Germans ruled the territory and not the Russians. Thus, according to these correspondents, Russia claims definitely it was the Germans who did the murders. Thus, it can easily be seen how Moscow would tell Cordell Hull, in effect, that Russia wants no dealings with the Polish government, which put out the Nazi side of the murder story. The next most dramatic news today is that Argentina has finally broken with the Axis. We'll take you to Buenos Aires in a moment for a direct report. But in Italy, the Germans are apparently pulling troops back from the Cassino front in a great rush to combat the new American landing near Rome. There is little doubt the Germans intend to defend Rome to the last. According to Swiss reports, the enemy already has started digging trenches and setting up fortifications in the capital. And Russia announces the Soviet capture of that important railroad town, Krasnovardaisk, outside Leningrad. But now, to Stanley Ross in Buenos Aires.
The Argentine government today broke relations with Germany and Japan, thus cutting the Axis off from its only diplomatic listening posts in the Western Hemisphere. The motive for expelling Hitler and Tojo's last official representatives was the discovery that the Axis was violating Argentina's neutrality through the operation of a vast spy ring. Not only in Argentina, but throughout South America, the Gestapo spread a network of espionage that cost many Allied lives and ships. But the cocksure Germans took North American and Argentine simplicity too much for granted, and their carelessness led to their undoing. For Argentina, traditionally neutral, the break with the Axis was unprecedented and unexpected. Argentina remained neutral 2 years ago after three of its ships were torpedoed by the Germans. It remained neutral during the First World War, even after it was proven that the German minister advised U-boats to sink Argentine ships without leaving a trace. Only last week, a prominent Latin American diplomat told me it was too late now for Argentina to change its international position. Argentina is neutral by tradition. If she breaks that tradition now, there must be a hot story behind it. Aside from the fact that the spies include members of high Argentine society, details of the story cannot be fully revealed. But the scope and efficiency of the spy ring is illustrated by what happened to a Norwegian tanker leaving Venezuela with oil for the Allied army. It was halted by a submarine, and before sinking the tanker, the U-boat commander asked the Norwegian how many men were aboard. "I have 41, said the captain. "You are wrong, said the well-informed Nazi. "You have only 40. You left one man in the hospital at Maracaibo." When such espionage efficiency is maintained in Venezuela, which has no relations with the Axis, you can imagine what the Argentine government has discovered in a country where the swastika waved freely. This is Stanley Ross in Buenos Aires, returning you to Kerry Longwire.
Thank you, Stanley Ross. Here's just one comment on that Argentine development from the Allied point of view. That, of course, is highly important news. Allied pressure has forced the Argentine dictatorship to throw out enemy agents, to throw them out of their last big stronghold in this hemisphere. But whether the Argentine military bosses love the cause of democracy any more than they ever did, however, is still a question. Secretary Hull, for instance, remarks pointedly this afternoon that he presumes Argentina will now adopt other measures for inter-American security. President Roosevelt has stepped emphatically into the fight over whether soldiers will be able to vote this year. As you know, one plan, sponsored by Democratic Senators Green and Lucas, would order the federal government to deliver ballots to soldiers. The War and Navy Department say it would be impossible to send 48 different kinds of ballots overseas for the 48 states. Others say that a federal control ballot would violate states' rights. Well, Mr. Roosevelt bluntly labels the states' rights ballot plan a fraud upon the American people. But now your announcer. I'll be back in just 60 seconds.
Even though our synthetic rubber program is hugely successful, there is still a critical shortage of rubber for civilian tires. There are many reasons for this, but here are two. The demands of the armed services for bullet-sealing gas tanks, life rafts, and countless other rubber products other than tires continue to require a huge percentage of our manufacturing facilities. The manpower shortage, too, is handicapping the tire makers and the manufacturers of tire cords, just as it has in every other vital industry. Here, then, are a few simple rules for helping you to save your tires. Drive only when necessary. Drive carefully to avoid damaging your tires. 2, keep tires inflated to recommended pressure. 3, recap your tires as soon as the thread has worn off. Recap before it's too late. 4, share your car with others so that the limited tire supply will serve more. Above all, conserve your tires and keep your car on war duty.
And this is Kerry Longmire once more. Just how prevalent is the black market here in America? Well, we have a guest today here in the studio who I think can give us the answer. She is Miss Patricia Lockridge, the author of an article in the current Woman's Home Companion magazine on exactly that subject. Miss Lockridge, I understand you've been patronizing the black market in 8 cities of the United States. And for the benefit of our listeners, too, I'll hasten to say you were patronizing that black market for a legitimate purpose, to find out just how bad violations are and to report back to your magazine.
That's right, Mr. Longmire. I traveled 11,000 miles in visiting those 8 major cities. It took in a cross-section of the whole country.
Well, as the result of your tour, what would you say about the black market in the United States?
I was shocked by what I saw, genuinely shocked. I found the black market has neither social nor economic boundaries. It exists literally everywhere in the United States, and far too many Americans are willing to take advantage of it.
Would you say, then, that a general tendency to patronize the black market actually exists among most people in America?
Oh, no, indeed. As I point out in my article, by far the great majority of Americans do patriotically observe OPA regulations.
Then, to take it up from there, it's the serious nature of these OPA violations rather than the number which hampers our economy today.
That's it, Mr. Longmire.
Well, now, I think everyone will be interested if you give us a few samples of your experience in buying on the black market.
Well, let me see. In Chicago, I was able to buy meat in grocery stores just off the loop and in suburban areas without ration points and with no questions asked. Of course, I had to pay far more than the ceiling price. In one instance, I bought 2 dozen frankfurters. I later tried to give the meat to an army canteen, but they were suspicious about accepting such a large quantity from an unknown civilian. They probably thought I was being trailed by an OPA inspector. I finally found a couple of sailors on Michigan Boulevard who would take the franks.
That was in Chicago, of course. Now, what about the other cities?
Well, I'm afraid I can't have time to go into details about all the purchases which I made, for I made them in Washington, New York, Kansas City, Dallas, Houston, and New Orleans. But New Orleans is outstanding, because I went to a meat speakeasy in New Orleans, and there I was offered pork chops, which not only were above the ceiling price, but were actually spoiled. I wouldn't have fed them to a dog.
Well, I think that's a very important point that you've just made, because the black market is definitely a carrier of disease, I've been told, as well as destructive to our economy through possible inflation. But you mentioned New York and Washington. What conditions did you find in those two cities?
Well, they were almost worse in Washington than anywhere else, because in Washington, I didn't have to ask to make illegal purchases. They were offered to me, right on Connecticut Avenue in one of the very best shops where some of our best people are supposed to shop. That time, I declined to buy, and I could tell from the salesman's surprise that I had refused, that he was used to grateful acceptance. As for New York, well, there I was able to buy a pound of butter without ration stamps in one place and was told, come back if you need anything else.
So far, Miss Lockridge, we've talked exclusively about food, which I'll admit is an interesting subject, but women are interested in stockings, too, I know. So how about stockings and other rationed articles?
The same story, Mr. Longmire, and perhaps even worse. Because if there's one thing to tempt the American woman today, it is a pair of nylon stockings or an extra pair of shoes. And, of course, that sort of black market purchase is the worst kind of disloyalty, because it feeds only on vanity. It doesn't even have the justification of an empty stomach.
Then what might be your final observation on the black market as you found it on your trip, Miss Lockridge?
There seem to be many Americans today with these porterhouse pocketbooks who are failing in their elementary duties of good citizenship. The black market exists because they're willing to pay the price.
Well, thank you very much, Patricia Lockridge. I think right here, though, I ought to quote Mr. Chester Bowles, OPA administrator, on the exact subject you've been talking about. He has said, and I quote, "It is up to every American woman to enlist in the home front fight to smash the black market. Today, by far, the great majority of us are scrupulously observing rationing and ceiling prices. But there are those who place appetite above patriotism. You can do your share in breaking the ominous black market by obeying OPA regulations and reporting all violations. It's your duty to yourself, to your children, and to your men in uniform." That ends that particular quotation from Mr. Chester Bowles. And now this is Carrie Longmire saying goodbye until tomorrow at this same time.